to accomplish it with success. Where some of those other ones have a great vision, but they aren't providing you all these steps. Charlotte Mason gives a lot more detail. But they're going for the same thing. Okay, and I always teach, I always say that she cracked the code of childhood education. And she did. She found a way to deliver lessons to children that cause them to think that it's easy. And so as they grow in their studies, by age 12, 13, 14, they can read Shakespeare and understand it. And then it's really exciting because that thing we were all focused on, if you've read any TJ Ed or Well Educated Heart classical education stuff, we were focused on the idea that we would get the great messages from the classics rather than be told what to think through lessons and worksheets and lectures. And that is so inspiring and exciting, and it caused a huge movement across the homeschooling world when Oliver DeMille dug this up from the dust. But in order for that to happen, the kids need a very fair amount of reading comprehension skills, or they're just going to dabble in classic literature till they're 18, right? If you're really going to read Adam Smith, if you're really going to read Kepler, if you're really going to read Euclid, you really know how to, you need to know how to read very well. And you need to have, for children and teens, you need, they don't have the vision that adults have. So they need to think it's easy and not have this huge emotional overwhelm when it comes to this hefty stuff. Or what do? They tune out, turn off, and quit, right? And a lot of people do resort back to methods they didn't really want to do, things they didn't really believe in, because they just need something to happen. For goodness sakes, like, this kid's not going to leave this home with no education, you know. And so her methods are really valuable because of that. But where home atmosphere comes in is she felt that that there were so many aspects of a child's education. The studies and the structure were only a part of that. The non-structure, the afternoon of unstructured free time that she was so big on, was a huge part of that. And then the third pillar that she speaks of is the atmosphere of the home. And so it was that important to her that it was one of the three pillars of education. And so I've spent a lot of time studying aspects of atmosphere of the home, and I've also found them to be just as important as the very studies you assign, and just as important as the big long hours of free time in the afternoon when studies are done, when they can really discover themselves and what they want to get into. I have found home atmosphere to be equal to those. So let's see. So what I want to talk to you about is how to create an educational home atmosphere and the great influence that it can have on the quality of our kids' education. Okay, so that scatterbrain that we feel as adults when there's too much going on affects our children, just like it affects us. They may not be responsible for getting kids to the dentist on time and making sure the baby's asleep and making sure the rice doesn't burn. They might not be responsible for those things, but they feel and feed off of the energy of, you know, the vibes we're giving off, especially the mother. There seems to be this invisible cord from the mother's heart and the mother's energy to theirs, and it not only affects the quality of their whole life, but it definitely affects their education, specifically when you're doing education through the classics and not a bunch of specific assignments to check off. If their education was just sort of like you see in public school, or even some homeschoolers use a lot of manuals and curriculum, and you do these to-dos and check things off. I call it box checking mode. When kids are in box checking mode, well, they can do that when there's a stressful home environment, because it's just something you get done. They can vacuum the floor when there's a stressful home environment. If they need to write these three words and answer these specific questions and or show their mom, they can do that when there's not a lot of peace and order and beauty in the home, because they are using a part of their brain that is for getting things done. And it's extremely counterproductive to what people are going for when they want classical education. Classics are hard. They take pondering. Not only do they take skill that you need to work hard toward, they take pondering and wondering on. You kids get into a zone of thinking and connecting. And Charlotte Mason said, and I believe this as well, that that the Holy Ghost is the imparter of all knowledge. And she said that is why, and she said the ancients knew this, that's why you see this big mural on the Spanish chapel in Florence, Italy, showing the seven disciplines. And there's a representation for each. Euclid is in charge of the geometry. Somebody's in charge of the philosophy. They're painted on this gorgeous mural, and above them is a conduit of light coming from heaven, and a muse, right? Like an angel, an angelic heavenly figure that's dumping into them what needs to be imparted. And as she presented these ideas to me, I loved it. It resonated with me. But I'll tell you, I saw it in action in my home. As I created a home environment of peace and beauty and inspiration, my children were able to get into that quiet, pondering, wondering mode where the Spirit could teach them. They need to have questions. They need to care, or there's no point to classical education, right? Because we don't have a bunch of credentials and grades and stuff they can show anybody. Their only proof is in the pudding. The proof of it is in them. How do they think? How do they feel? How do they vote? How do they perceive the world? And how do they live? And that's also historically has been the whole purpose of classical education. It was that you might obtain the good life, they call it. That you would figure out how to have a better life. Gandhi, Aristotle, Einstein all spoke of education as the making of the whole person, body, mind, and spirit. And that's absolutely the angle Charlotte Mason was coming from as well. So in order to do that, children cannot be in box-checking mode. It would be better they took the day off and went out and played with the chickens, because that's connecting and natural and spiritual, right? Than to be learning to do education as tasks they must check off so that they can go jump on the trampoline. And so, because of that, the home environment is then vastly important, because they cannot separate themselves from the energy of the home, from the relationships of the home, from the schedule or lack of schedule and the chaos that it brings. They can't do that. They're not capable. And so they study inside of that chaos when it's there. And of course, it's always there a little for everyone. But to be aware of it and working to keep balance and beauty and have peace prevail, you will see as you hone in and have more success with that, that's when the children can hone in and ponder and wonder upon these great, great ideas that will refine and change their lives. So that's where home atmosphere relates to classical education. We need our kids in what I call the zone. And it's not how they're acting when they need to scrub the toilets and vacuum so they can get to soccer on time. It's really different. They need to know, this is my half an hour to read my literature book. Next comes my half an hour to read my geography classic. Then I go write my narrations or whatever. Then piano happens. Tomorrow, the same thing, except it'll be this book and that book. When they, it feels almost like military time we're going to, you know, succumb our children to if you're not used to it. But what I have noticed, helping them form habits to participate in this in an orderly way causes them to absolutely thrive. It does become a sort of security blanket for them because it feeds them. Okay, and how do kids act when they know they're always going to get their next meal? Right? There's no replacement for that kind of security in a child versus one that has extreme upheaval in the home and may not know where their next meal is coming from, right? Well, on another level, when they read the classics and actually gain a ton from them, they're feeling fed. Charlotte Mason said that the mind feeds off of ideas like the body feeds off of food. It's very satisfying. Kids who aren't used to it have an unmet need. Kids who do not know how to gain knowledge and satisfaction from books, from art, from music, have a hunger they haven't filled. They have an insecurity that they have not overcome. And it's an inborn need, and it's not going to kill them like hunger would, right? But there is a sort of dying, there is a sort of deadness when they're not getting that. And when they do have it, you can see the difference. And people describe it like, they're alive to this. They're turned on to this. It's like a life and death sort of thing, but in another realm. So anyway, the reason that I'm so passionate about home atmosphere is because it allows children to get into that zone. And that's where real education lives. It's when the children are diving deep into the classics, their heart is at peace, they're free to ponder and wonder, and then what do? They always make connections. Their brain says, oh, that's just like David and Goliath. Oh, that reminds me of the same thing that I just saw on the wall of grandma's house, the art. You know, they start making connections between history, between literature, between art, between music, and that's real education. So I'm constantly asking myself, if they're not in that mode, why? So I want to talk to you about the things that I've noticed that affect that home atmosphere. Home atmosphere includes all those things, physical, emotional, spiritual, etc., that affect our children's ability to relax, focus, ponder, and take in beauty and truth contained in the classics. And when our kids' education got more serious, the older they got, more expensive, more time-consuming, that's when I immediately began to tune in on what was making it work and what wasn't. And my role was to get really busy and effective and take responsibility for those things. Because kids, however much they thrive from a great home atmosphere, they just cannot wrap their brain around it or affect it or control it very much. That's the role of the parents. They benefit from it, but they don't create it. It's something that we create for them. They definitely play a role if they're being contentious, you know, or rebellious, but even that falls upon the parents to figure out and help with. So it really is a role of the parents. Okay, so I've noticed that things that affect home atmosphere for me kind of fall into two categories, and then there are many topics within each, but one of the categories is the physical things. These things are a little more boring and annoying to deal with. They're not as beautiful as the art on the walls and you know, cozying up to the fire to read classic literature at night with a family. Those are the more fun parts of home atmosphere. But these physical things are very important because they cause those fun parts to be able to happen. And they are order in the schedule. We'll talk about each of these a bit. Order in the chores, chore rotations, responsibilities. Order in the meal prep, meal rotations. Order in the budget. And order in the toys. So those are the physical elements that I've noticed that really affect this. And then some aspects that seem more in the emotional, mental, spiritual category, although a lot of this overlaps a bit. When there is cleanliness, when there is beauty in the decor, we all feel that, you know? We all know how it feels to be somewhere beautiful. It feels really different. We have a reverent, pondering feeling. Beauty in the art, beauty in the music, beauty in the media and movies that we bring into our homes, beauty in how we converse, even beauty in how we handle disagreements, especially in how we handle disagreements, mistakes, and disappointments. How do we handle those? Do the children gather beauty from the way they get treated when they mess up, or do they gather shame? Beauty in the table settings. Beauty in meal presentation. All of these things, as subtle or seemingly unrelated as they may seem, greatly affect the child's education because, like I said before, of the peace that they secure in their mind and heart. These things bring a lot of peace. And one thing I like to think about when I get going on the physical aspects, the budget, the schedule, all the things that make me be rigid, all the things I kind of don't want to deal with, right? They take self-discipline from us. I like to think about this analogy of a skeleton versus our bodies. Our skeletons are mathematical, right? They are based on proportions and physics, and the biology of them follows laws of mathematics. And they're necessary to have our bodies held up. But we don't want to see them. We don't want to see anyone's skeleton. We're really grateful that they have one, right? But we don't want to see it. It's not the beautiful part, but it creates the beauty and the functionality of the whole body. And that's what I think of these really important but not so fun things to deal with, like the chore chart, the following up, the consequences, how to train the kids to do those things, the meal plans, the budgeting. All that's like not as pretty as the beautiful, inspiring education we got excited to give our kids, right? But as necessary as the skeleton. Okay, so now I want to talk about, just a second, I want to talk about some of these specifically. Okay, there's not time in this setting to go into all the how-tos of the physical things, so I want to focus more on the beautiful things, but I will say, we teach entire courses on it. If anyone's feeling needy in that area, like you would like to learn more about budgeting, scheduling, chore charts, following up with kids, I wanted to mention them so that you could put them down as questions to ask yourself. Is my schedule serving me, or am I serving it? Those kinds of things. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the more beautiful parts of home atmosphere, which, like I was saying, absolutely depend upon being able to keep a budget, a schedule, a chore chart, menu rotation, all those things. Okay, so first one I want to talk about is am I creating an atmosphere of learning or an atmosphere of entertainment in my home? Right? And entertainment has its place. Everyone needs some entertainment sometimes. But we can create a home that is centered around and promoting entertainment rather than learning. And the two sadly do have to compete a little bit because they both compete for the dopamine drips in our brain, right? If we're getting overstimulation, we probably, if we're children, we don't notice the subtle beauties in the classics. If we're not, we are able to pick up on those, and that's why those two compete. So an atmosphere of learning is one of peace. Okay, it's one of it's a home with inspiring books, art, and music all around them. If kids have this, they are encouraged by virtue of the very air they breathe in the home to learn. It's just in the air. It's seeping into them. It's giving them this refining quality of thought, which I'm going to talk about in just a minute with art and music. But it's simply something that's gifted to them that you don't have to go train and do a bunch of stuff to make happen. Okay, now definitely there are other things you do to make their education happen. But to do that sets the stage and lays the foundation to create an atmosphere of learning, beauty, and inspiration. Okay. An atmosphere of entertainment lends itself to seeking more and more stimulation. And once kids get on that path, they're not impressed till they get more stimulation, right? And this can be fueled by a lack of peace or lack of balance and contentment in their lives. And then they seek entertainment to numb out and to fill that hole. And one thing that's interesting that I learned from Charlotte Mason, you know, because kids have this desire to learn, because that is an inborn need and they need ideas to feed off of, if they're not getting it, they usually do fill it by seeking stimulation in other ways. And what I mean is like constant social stimulation, screens, Just constantly looking for the next thing. Can I have a treat? Like looking for the next thing to fill the gap, because they're not feeding off of ideas. And so that's just something to be aware of and ask yourself. Am I providing a bunch of stimulating activities in, like overstimulation in their free time, so that they do their school and then they just go like binge? Yeah. Or am I providing activities that sort of match the effort they have to put into their school, right? In their schoolwork, they have to work hard in their reading before they get a drip of dopamine from that, right? Same with baking. What if you allowed your kids to bake in their free time? They have to work really hard before they get the satisfaction of a blueberry pie that turned out right. What if you give them scooters and pogo sticks and bikes and shovels? They have to work hard on those to get rewarded. But when they have battery toys and screens, they don't have to work hard at all. And so it's really nice to be able to come up with all kinds of variety of wonderful free time options that match a little more closely to nature. In nature, you don't feel awesome shooting a basketball until you swish it, right? And then as soon as you do, you're like, ah, oh, I did it. Well, that's what we would hope they have, those kinds of experiences through all their free time. Something that takes effort and investment before it gives back. And that way they can go have tons of fun in their free time. We don't have to worry. I love when something happens and there's a whole day of free time for my kids, you know, a holiday, or for some reason, you know, school stuff gets canceled, because their free time is so wholesome that it's really beautiful. They would build another treehouse, you know, they would read another book. They would, so there's no end. They build bike jumps. There's so much they can do when their environment is more natural rather than full of overstimulation. So that's one aspect of, is my home an atmosphere of entertainment versus learning? It's what kind of activities are you providing? The other aspect is, are they seeking this overstimulation because of some imbalance? Because they're not getting fed, their mind is not getting fed ideas because of how we're doing school. And also, this is a topic for another time, but I'll just give you a brief synopsis. Charlotte Mason taught, like I was talking about in the last class, that education is for the whole person, body, mind, and spirit. And so if their education becomes little tasks they check off, and they're not able, they don't have the skill level to ponder and wonder and get intrigued, then they're going to have this empty feeling, and they're going to need to seek more entertainment, whether or not you're providing it. So those are like two sides of the coin for the entertainment. Okay, so one of the things that I want to talk about under the more spiritual, emotional, mental category of things that influence our home environment is art and music. So Charlotte Mason said that the purpose of art and music in the home, and also in their schedule, like their study schedule, art and music appreciation, is for the refining quality that it has on the children's hearts. That's the purpose of it. Art and music speak messages to the soul of beauty, of peace, of love, of all kinds of things, if it is good art and good music. And the children pick up on that totally subconsciously. It's not something you teach and preach. It's simply something they live with. It's kind of like children who are treated politely and with respect. They have a different air about them than children who are constantly needing to be defensive because of how they're getting treated. It's subtle. You're not training that behavior in them, but you're training that behavior in them by the way that you're acting. That's the same with the home environment. When they are around art and music, poetry, nature, and those things that are inherently very beautiful, those messages do sink in. I want to read you what Plato said about this. Musical training is a more potent instrument than any other, because rhythm and harmony find their way into the inward places of the soul, on which they mightily fasten, and making the soul of him who is rightly educated graceful, or of him who is ill-educated ungraceful. And also because he who has received this true education of the inner being will most shrewdly perceive omissions or faults in art and nature, and with a true taste, while he praises and rejoices and receives into his soul the good, he will become noble and good. He will justly blame and hate the bad. Now, in the days of his youth, even before he is able to know the reason why. See how subtle it is? Even before he is able to know the reason why. And when reason comes, so when they get older, 12-ish, 14-ish, when reason comes, he will recognize and salute the friend with whom his education has made him long familiar. So they're going to soak in this refining quality of spirit from the art and music in the home and not be aware of it. And the effect is they become comfortable and at peace with beautiful. And they become become uncomfortable and insecure around things that are not beautiful. Isn't that what we want? And Plato says, you train that first. This is very well-educated heart, if you're familiar with Marlene Peterson. That's the most influential place is the heart. And this is the heart of the home. This is the heart of the education, is that they would have this fine-tuning. They would get this their likes and dislikes. It's kind of their good and bad, their right and wrong, straight before they can reason about it. We want them to feel a little off-put by something vulgar. And we want them to feel attracted to something that's good and right. Why? Because that's what they need to do through all their education for the rest of their lives, is to be able to judge rightly. They need to be able to make judgment calls. And okay, so that's the purpose. I also have a documentary to suggest, if anyone's interested in writing this down. This documentary had a huge effect on our lives, our home, and everything we did that had to do with art and music. Because there was a modern philosopher, he's not alive anymore, but he was alive at the time that we first were watching this documentary. His name's Roger Scruton, and he explains, since he's a philosopher, he explains the reasons why art and music do this to us. Plato's telling us they do it. Charlotte Mason is telling us they do it. He's going to lay it out, and it's beautiful, and show us why we are so affected by them, why it is such a spiritual matter to have beautiful art and music around us, why we need it. And it's called Why Beauty Matters. I wouldn't watch it with little kids around, because while he's teaching of beauty, he is contrasting it with the vulgar. Not a ton. I wouldn't say like that this is inappropriate in any way, but I think you'd be like, oh, I don't want my five-year-old looking at that, you know? And it's only a little bit, the contrast, but it's really important that it's there, because he really helps us feel. It's so off-putting to be immersed in all this classical art and music and then to see this other version. But it's very well done. Along these lines, Charlotte Mason even spoke about, yeah? Roger Scruton. Charlotte Mason spoke about even like the playroom. I was guilty of this. She said the playroom, she called them a nursery back then. The nursery is not to be a hospital for broken toys. She said only the best for the children. They need to play with things that are beautiful. They don't need to be elaborate or expensive, but someone needs to put a little care in so that it's not this junk pile. Right? And so that they get, again, so they get used to those things that are beautiful. It refines their taste and it refines their morals. Okay, now I want to switch to cleanliness. Okay, obviously, we all know cleanliness brings peace. So I don't need to preach that. But Charlotte Mason taught you can teach kids habits to help contribute to the chores, not just chores for them to do, habits so that they think it's easy. And this, for those of you who were in my last class, this is what her whole education is based on. She makes studies seem easy so that the kids, like I was saying, wake up at 12, 13, 14 and they can understand Shakespeare. She does the same, she has to do the same with chores. You can make it seem easy by giving really small amounts, but the follow-up needs to be top-notch. She says you might as well do something tiny and do it well. So, again, I have courses on all of this if you want to take them. But I want to give you a snippet on each of these, because a lot of these you can go find your own experts or you have a talent here or you have a neighbor that's really good at it, pick their brain. So what I want to say on the chores is training kids to do chores, yes, consequences are necessary. There needs to be lots of follow-up. But you can avoid a lot of the need of for consequences some of the time if you will train them gradually. And the way I like to do it is with, near, and away. With little kids, or kids that are acting like little kids because they didn't learn to do their chores well, you do it with them. And if they're really little, you do that for a lot of years. If they're older and they're acting little, it doesn't take that much time. They just need the experience and security of knowing we're going to mop this floor together. So you do it with them. And when I remember starting out, my little four-year-old, you know, in the morning when I would be making the oatmeal, I would give him a little basket of rags to fold. So I always had rags to fold, no matter what day of the week it was. And I would say, do you think, though, here's a big basket of rags, but you only have to fold three. But the most important part, more important than folding them right, is that you fold them and finish and tell me before you go play. Don't let anything distract you. It's only three rags. I'm sure you can do it. And then the next week it was five. And the next week it was eight. And the next week it was 10. And so do you see how non-overwhelming this is? High quality follow small task. And that's how she did education too. And in that way, the kids learn a pattern and a habit, which is way more effective than getting scared of a punishment and doing it. However, we all as humans want the path of least resistance, and the kids will need consequences. You know, what one that I like to do that is very non-abrasive is you can play when your chores are done, right? Obviously. And so when they're not done, you got to go keep finishing them. And then as they get older, we refine that. Like, I also expect another level of accountability when you're older. Like, it's not, can you mop a floor? Of course you can. You learned that when you were six. But can you be reliable? Can you report on it? Can you do it on time? That's the part. And that's what their privileges are attached to when they're older. Within reason. I'm not, like, going around just policing. But I'm definitely watching, and I'm definitely holding them accountable. I'll say something like, hey, I noticed that you were asked to do this, and then I found you out jumping on the trampoline. Tell me what went on. And I can be really gentle with it, but you see how they're brought to have to address it? And they're not yelled at, and they're not shamed or belittled, but they have to address it. Oh, sorry, Mom, I totally forgot. I saw the kids out playing, and I ran out. And I can say, that's totally okay. I just want you to come back in and do it, and then you can go play. And then tomorrow, I expect you to catch yourself in this. Okay, and if you do, great. If you don't, I don't want you using your phone. I don't want you going to basketball. I want you to stay home and have your free time at home with the family until you want to choose to be responsible, to be on time, to be accountable. And so I'll work with them. Or sometimes when it's new, I'll say, why don't you play with this morning schedule for 3 weeks? And there's plenty of room for error. And if you forget, I'll come help you and remind you, encourage you, see what I can do. And by the end of 3 weeks, let's have you doing it on time. Because when they learn to do that, that's what their whole, like, ability to do studies responsibly rests on. They strengthen their self-discipline muscle through chores, through small things that are not overwhelming, and then they can do things that would overwhelm almost any kid, you know, to sit 3 hours and read Plato and write about it, and they think it's easy. Yep.
Uh-huh. Now they're getting to be a little bit older. Like, would you still say to try to make the tasks small to begin with and then just build upon them? Because it feels like we want more, like maybe we expect more because they are older and they can do it.
Uh-huh. Definitely just use your mother heart, use the spirit to help you decide. But the pattern is start small and start with, near, away, and grow the task. So you have to use your own judgment. You know, my kids with ADHD, their tasks have to be smaller than the others. I don't talk about it. I don't point it all out. But they certainly have different tasks because they cannot handle the emotional overwhelm. And they need me with them more. And they need more encouragement. And they need more times getting brought back. But they definitely can do it. They don't have to be enabled in their disability to become lazy. So you just have to kind of use your judgment, but keep that pattern in mind. Do I sense that they're whining because they are allowing themselves to get away with irresponsibility? Or are they whining because what I assigned was too much? Were there clear expectations? Was there enough time to do it? I find with kids there are always interruptions. And if I'm going to hold them accountable to do things on time and do them well, I better make a nice buffer. What if they get a bloody nose in the middle of it? What if they need to go number two? Like, there are all these things they might make excuses for. And I want to make sure it's fair. I also don't want to be policey in any way when they mess up. I want to be gentle and kind and address it. So with near and away, that's my pattern. And then grow it. Okay, let's see. Okay, here's another aspect. Order in the schedule. A decluttered schedule brings peace of mind to kids that can get them into this wondering and pondering mode. When kids see even like subtle things like, oh, I forgot the electrician was coming and I have to take so-and-so to the orthodontist. And like, I get into like scatterbrain mom. They can't focus very good. They can't, unless like they have ADHD and their hyper-focus is reading. That was my only child that could continue to be in the zone if I got frantic. And even if I'm not acting frantic, there is just a feeling. There's an energy we don't see that this shows what we're feeling, and our kids feel it. So it's really fun to sit up at night. I like to do it in a hot bath and write out what you're expecting from yourself, from the kids. See if it's actually realistic. If there's not enough expectation and they're getting kind of on this end of the spectrum, getting away with laziness, tighten it up, make a plan, figure out how you can actually be with near and away during chores. Because you can. You don't have to be with for that long when they're older. You can invest in the beginning and then this gives back for years and years to come. But it's not going to happen if you're down loading the dishwasher, stirring the oatmeal, talking to the dog, like doing, you know, all your multitasking, and the kid's upstairs supposed to be making his bed. You're going to be catching him way after the fact. What I did to establish this, I set a different time to get up. I made the breakfast before they got up, just in the first few weeks, to just kind of hit reset and get our lives in order. And I would go sit in the room. My four boys shared a room. I would just sit in there and nurse the baby or read my scriptures or something. And I would, and one at a time, they would need to do their things. They couldn't even all do them at once in the beginning because they just all start doing cartwheels and jumping on the bed, right? We had to divide it up and say, okay, youngest goes first. The rest of you, you can read a book or play with a little stuffed animal in your bed. And we would make his bed together. In our family, we had beds, floors, closets, drawers. And that was their little rhyme. After they got their body ready, they had to do beds, floors, closets, drawers. And we would do it with. And then after a little while, that kid was ready for near. So I could be with certain kids and then could start doing it. If they'd gone through with me, they could start doing the near. They could have a little more distance from me and do okay. And it doesn't take long. It's a matter of like shrinking down, honing in, concentrating, and then let it grow. And what's so special about this is it really becomes, like I said earlier, this security blanket for the kids. My kids kind of knew, and I think they also feel fulfillment from being responsible and helpful in the home. They feel awesome when they're good at it. They feel terrible and want to avoid it and you when they're bad at it, but they feel awesome when they're good at it. And so my kids just knew, like, I wake up, I have my stuff, then there's breakfast, then there's Latin, then there's piano, then there's this, then there's that. And they just got like, this is when I exert effort, this is when I relax more. And it caused them to be incredibly productive. I have been told many times by many adults who my kids have either worked for or worked with or done something for or babysat for or nannied or dug a ditch for a neighbor or something. I've been told with tears in their eyes many times, what on earth did you do with those children? I have never seen a child accomplish work like that with an attitude like that in amounts like that. We should have never brought this other boy to work with him. He didn't even know the meaning of work. What? Tell me what you did. I've been asked that many times, and I didn't do anything very special. I got up 20 minutes earlier and sat in their room and did little tasks with them and then near them and then away from them. So it's small things done well. Oh boy, I get rambling. Okay, so we were on order in the schedule and keeping it decluttered, but I veered back into chores. So with the schedules can be overwhelming for kids if they're not used to them. But if you make it simple, print a little table chart on a Google Doc. If they're little, put a little picture of like a comb and a toothbrush. You know, if they're older, you can put the time, do your personal chores, come for family scriptures, breakfast, Latin piano, whatever. It's really nice for the kids to know they're going to be productive and get fed in this way. And then it takes self-discipline. So they're really excited after lunch to then be free. And the two really feed each other. Okay, but I had to work really hard because I carried so many more responsibilities than them, right? They had their chores, but they were guarded from the real world. But I wasn't. So my husband and I had to work really hard to, like, not make ourselves overburdened. We often took on way too much. And no matter how much you guard the kids from the pressures of the real world, if you don't guard yourself just a little bit by saying no and having boundaries, then again, they see that frantic energy from you and they cannot get pondering. It's absolutely true. I remember seeing my kids at times not in the zone in their reading. And they were like distracted and I could tell they were trying to solve my problems. They're like, Mom, don't forget the dentist. Like their brain was feeding off of the chaotic energy in the home. And so I had to get really self-disciplined. I was not a natural at this. I had to get really self-disciplined at saying no. We were trying to run a little hobby farm. We had a cow that we milked because our kids were allergic to regular dairy, but they could eat the raw. We had all these things going. And as we were really hard workers. As we got on top of it all, then I realized, like, it's on top of us. Like, we can't bear it. And we had to learn and make changes. And sometimes yes was the answer and cancel these other things. And sometimes no was the answer. But it was so hard for me to face the yeses and nos because I like to do everything. And I always believe more can fit in an hour. That's my challenge in life. But oh my goodness, it's so important to their education. If ever we were moving or a new baby was born or travels were coming up, you know how there's just extra to-dos all the time. That's when it was a little harder for my kids to get in the zone. I could even guard them from that normal, natural stress if I would decrease their schedule in those months. If I would say, I'm going to be doing a lot of packing, you know, or I'm going to be on errands instead of right here. So let's just say, you guys, just instruments, chores, and math. That's all for this week. So you can do that. You can set boundaries on yourself and the kids while you get those things under control. Okay, let's see. Kids are always tracking, like I said, our energy. So a couple of questions you can ask yourself. Each of these is so loaded. Like this could be a 12-week course. But some questions you can ask yourself. Take them home on a list and ponder each one in its due time. But a question you can ask yourself is, when hardships come, am I exuding fear or faith? Kids know that. I was a pretty good faker. Because I loved to, like, be positive. But I had one son who could read my mind. He still can. He can see right through the facade of when I'm acting like things are fine. And so it's better than faking it. Go get that peace yourself. Ask for help. Say no to things. Cancel things. Because they're feeding off your real energy, not your fake. Another question we can ask yourself is, do I have a mentality of scarcity or abundance? I used to have a scarcity mentality. Like there was never enough of stuff, of time, of money, of anything. And the kids feel that. I learned how to have an abundance mentality. And so then the kids think they can do anything. Well, if I don't have a go-kart, I'll build one. I don't have the money to buy the stuff from Cal Ranch. Who needs my skills? They just become really productive. And that's a really fun aspect to add. Okay, let's see. Again, no one can be perfect in these things. So don't take any of this on as shame. Write each thing down that speaks to you and go put some time and effort into only one of them. Do with, near, and away with yourself. I'm going to let everything else go. I'm going to focus on this. When it's going well, I'm going to focus on that. Okay. Something I'm not going to talk about, there's not time, I'm just going to mention. These aspects of home atmosphere greatly affect the kids' mind and their ability to concentrate on hard studies, and that is sleep. Kids need lots more sleep than most of them get. Matthew Walker is a wonderful sleep expert to listen to. So you can look him up if you want. I think he's a neurologist from Great Britain, but he's great. Matthew Walker. Sleep has such a huge effect on kids' studies. When you're doing classical education, which takes concentration, like we've talked about, kids cannot do it in sleep debt. They fall asleep because you have to relax to take in those ideas. If your school is jump on this program, check these boxes, email your teacher your math assignment. If it's just all checking boxes, they can definitely do that in sleep debt. Like they can wake up and mow the lawn in sleep debt. But if they sit down and if they ponder, they start to go to sleep, which is a wonderful thing because then you realize they're not getting enough rest. What I did years ago when I learned about this and the horrible effects it has on their brain, I decided to let my kids sleep with no alarm so that I would see how many hours they actually needed. And it's really unproductive because they sleep till noon. But if you just do it a few times to get a gauge for how much sleep they need, you can change your schedule. Like, we don't need to go to bed at 10. You can go to bed at 8. You're really little. You can go to bed at 6. Like, you can do whatever you need to do to make sure they're getting enough. But what I found from research, and then I experimented in the home for years with this, I found it to be 100% true, 100% of the time, which is kids before the age of 8 will sleep about 12 hours. That's really surprising to most people. And so I needed to be honest and change our lives so that their bedtime matched the wake-up time. Or I need to stop having that early wake-up time for them. One or the other. Children between 8 and 12 will thrive on about 11 hours of sleep. That's really hard in our world because people are planning activities at night. And then we want to be early to bed, early to rise people so that we're not lazy. And those two don't match. You got to choose one or the other. Either we're going to say no to some activities and get up early, or we're going to say yes to some activities and get up later. We can't do both. After we had been into this a while, my boys all tried out for Newsies in the community play. We never did things that late at night. It was so late. It got out at, 10:30 at night? We were not those people. We were like the most early to bed, early to rise people ever. My kids endured a lot of ridicule for how early we went to bed for so many years, but I just felt that they should do it. And I thought, well, we homeschool, let's change everything. So they woke up at 9:30 in the morning. They got their long sleep. It was fun. It was worth it. The months passed. We went back to early to bed, early to rise. Another thing is food. Inflammatory foods are really hard on the brain. So I'm not going to go into that. You can look it up. Okay. So now I want to talk about, in closing, of all these aspects of home environment, and these are all the things that like mothers are always so in tune to, like, oh, we need a better set of curtains. Oh, I don't like how that rug looks. We're all in tune to this atmosphere stuff. It's part of who we are. You know, you can make a lifetime study of it. I'm still learning. I'm still refining mine. But the most important aspect of the environment in the home is you. If you get overburdened, you cannot lead with light and inspiration. And Charlotte Mason had so much to say to mothers about this. She said, let me back up with this. Her studies were so short, sweet, and right to the point that the kids had lots of free time. She wanted them in nature, you know, if they were under 8, she wanted them out in nature 6 to 8 hours a day, at least in free time, if the weather permits, out in nature. And so they wake up, they do their chores, scriptures, breakfast, have their 10-minute reading and writing lesson with their mom, maybe read to them, you know, on the couch for an hour, and they're done. They're out the door by 10, and they're in and out, they're playing, they're discovering who they are, they're having all this time to grow. 8 to 12-year-olds, 4-5 hours of free time a day. 12 and up, two, three, 4 hours of free time a day. And I took this desperately to heart because it felt so true to me. I did not feel good about the overscheduled kids that just were raised in a car seat, you know, and drove everywhere all afternoon. And often we hired drivers to take our girls to ballet or our boys to taekwondo so that my little kids did not grow up in the car seat. But Charlotte Mason said, when you get that, when you're off, when you're not feeling connected to what you're doing, when you're full of shame because you failed at this, when your schedule's too busy, when anything's throwing you off, she said, let the mother go out and play. That's what's keeping the kids so balanced. It's better to cancel what you're doing and go, she said, go sit out in a field till you connect. Go out. And I found that to be true. It was really hard for me because I'm a doer. That can be a strength or a weakness. I always think I can do more than I can. And so I would think, well, I'm fine. Take a couple deep breaths and let's get this math lesson done. But she said, no, go outside and rest. And I'll tell you, every time I didn't, I regretted it. And every time I did, I felt so happy. She talked about the, I can't remember what time period now. I think it's medieval times. There were so many paintings of the Madonna. And it was a very popular thing. You look in art books, and I've done this with my daughter when she was doing art and narrating every day. But there are periods of time when there's a lot of the Mother Mary painted. And she said, if you will look at those, they were trying to give an air of peace, a message of total serenity. She had to carry the weight of the world. She had to be a pregnant teenager in a conservative culture, unwed, right? So she knows what it's like to feel off. And they show her with this peace, this be still and know that I am God. The handmaiden of the Lord. She kept these things and pondered them in her heart. We get these clues from the scriptures that she at least tried to choose peace in these times. And so the thing I want to emphasize in my last minute and a half is what the children need the most in the home atmosphere, more than the art on the walls, more than the matching curtains, more than a beautiful presentation of the dinner at the table. What they really need is the mother to be at peace. And it's my experience that our spirits and the Spirit of the Lord speak to us through our bodies. We feel anxiety for a reason. I don't think it's wise to medicate it away. I think we carry way too much. And if we would listen to our bodies, then we would say, what's burdening me? This. Get rid of it or change something else so it fits. What's burdening me now? This. If we'll listen to our bodies, we don't need a ton of remaking and therapy, and like, we are amazing, amazing people inside, and we duct tape ourselves up so that light doesn't shine. Usually, subconsciously, inadvertently, by taking on things that don't fit. And so that's my invitation to you. Among all the things you may have thought of or felt or written down in this, if you will sit in the quiet at night and figure out what you need to be at peace, to be able to bear the things you've taken on and should you have taken them on in the first place. If anyone's interested in more information on Charlotte Mason's classical education, my daughter and I teach courses on it, and I also teach master classes on how to be your kid's own arithmetic teacher because I'm a private math tutor. And I teach master classes on home environment where we go really deep into all of these. And we also have free Zoom calls every Thursday night, 7 to 8 Mountain Time. And if you stop by my booth, there is a flyer with a QR code that has that Zoom link. And anyone and everyone is welcome. It's kind of a gathering place. People just come on and ask whatever, and all things education. And so it's really fun. Come join if you want. Thank you so much. I didn't push anything. So
Oh, good. Thank God. You're welcome.